and we're joined in studio by Prudence Johnson. And Prudence, of course, gracing the studio at least twice before. It's great to have you back into Cook County. Prudence, starting out with Rio Nido, and then moving on to Prairie Home Companion as the featured singer there. She's also been in a couple of movies, Robert Redford's River Runs Through It and the Prairie Home Companion, the movie. This time she's up to do a kind of a multimedia concert. Not only will she be singing, there's going to be stories and pictures and focusing on Edna St. Vincent Millay's poetry, which is melded into the music, not only with Prudence, but with other musical folks being along. Laura Caviani, who has been here during, I think, some of our jazz productions that we've had in the past, and Michelle Kinney on cello, Joe Savage on pedal steel guitar, Mark Anderson on percussions, and Joan Griffith on guitar. Prudence, welcome back to the Roadhouse.
It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, nice to see you again.
All along.
Nice to see you.
We've been looking forward to having you come back. This is quite an achievement to put poetry to music. Is not an easy thing to do normally, I wouldn't think.
Well, it was my idea, but I can't take credit actually for the songs because they were written by Laura, Michelle, Joan, and Gary Rue. Mm-hmm. But I kind of came up with the idea when I was reading a biography of Millay that came out about 10 years ago called Savage Beauty. It's a great, great biography if you haven't read it. I never knew anything about Millay, as a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't that familiar with her poetry, but when I was reading the poetry, I would always hear it as music.
It was kind of lyrical.
In my mind, yeah, especially her early stuff, which is what we deal with. She wrote all of this poetry when she was in her teens and 20s.
Isn't that amazing?
And that's really the only time that we deal with. It's written in meters that fit very well. But also, I really was taken with the themes. She had a really deeply spiritual relationship with nature, and that comes out in a lot of her poetry. But she also had this pretty unusual take on love for someone of her generation. She believed that women were just as entitled to amorous adventure as men. And she definitely lived that way.
Probably wasn't a new idea.
It might not have been a new idea, but not many people were pulling it off.
Yeah.
And Millay did. So so I presented these composers with this idea, and they all came back with some really great tunes. And I know that a lot of people hear that this show is based on poetry, and they go, oh, well, I'll be watching TV tonight. But but don't do that. It's come on out to the show, because the music is great. I got to say, my band is unbelievably great. We've been having a really good time. And everybody who comes and sees this show, I have them write evaluation forms, and every single person has said they would recommend it highly to their friends, and that it was much more than they expected. So it's a lot of fun, and it is just as visual as it is orally pleasing.
And you've brought some great artists with you.
Absolutely, they're all on their way up here right now. And I gotta say, I think it's a little bit of a stroke of genius to add Joe Savage to the band. You don't often hear a pedal steel player and a cellist in the same band. Mm-hmm. And he's just an absolute marvel, and he plays harmonica as well. If you any harmonica playing fans out there have got to hear Joe.
And I know that Mark Anderson has been described to me as just an amazing percussionist.
Oh,
well.
He is. I mean, the thing about it is he's so good at what he does that you can almost kind of take it for granted, because he just plays it all so perfectly. He doesn't draw any attention to himself, and he is just a true consummate musician. He plays with everybody and anybody who can get him, you know. He's worked with Peter Struzko and, all kinds of different sorts of ethnic combinations, too. He spent a lot of time in Africa and in China studying their indigenous instruments and learning how to play them.
You know, you were talking about Millay here in the last few minutes. She also won a Pulitzer Prize for her poetry.
She did.
Pretty amazing.
She did.
For
she
that
was.
Age.
She had just turned 31 when she won the Pulitzer, and that's kind of the time period that we end with, because then she went on to, you know, she was a huge celebrity. after that, and she was listened to by millions on the radio throughout the Depression and the war years.
And I didn't mention, you know, the name of the concert, A Girl Named Vincent. And there's
yes.
a story to that. It's not just...
Well, there is. Her mother had a brother who was trapped in the cargo hold of a ship for 10 days without food or water, and they discovered him just, you know, clinging to life, and brought him to St. Vincent's Hospital in New York. And when she was just going into labor with her first child, Millay's mother, she heard that her brother had been found and was being revived at St. Vincent's. So then she has the baby and names the baby Edna St. Vincent Millay, and her name was Vincent up through kind of until she really became, you know, a famous person and started using her.
And I understand she preferred to be called Vincent, at least when she was young.
She did, and as she entered a national poetry contest when she was still a teenager, and she entered the contest as E. Vincent Millay. So, of course, everyone thought that this amazing poem called Renaissance, which put her on the map, was written by a man. And they didn't really expect it to be a man who was so young. And here it turns out to be a teenage girl.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful young girl. At that time, she was quite young.
She was young, and she was who I think Edmund Wilson said that falling in love with her was an inevitable consequence of meeting her.
Oh.
Everybody fell in love with her.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that when you read the poetry, you thought of it
musically.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard concept to get from that written page. Although, of course, when you're writing songs, you're doing the same thing. Was it just specific to her work that this works for you? Can you work with other poetry to make this happen?
I'm sure that you can, and many people do. I haven't tried with any other poets yet. But
is it difficult to phrase sometimes, or does the music, when they write the music, does that make it less of a challenge?
I guess, you know, that might be a good question for the composers, and too bad that they're not sitting here with us right now. But I know, I mean, some poetry became actually more free form and less metered. And then I think it's more of a challenge to set it to music that really strikes the ear. You know what I'm saying? And this stuff just fits so nicely into songs. The phrases are all just, you know, perfect length for singing.
And your voice is, I mean, it's a beautiful voice, but it's also your diction is really clear, and it might fit something like poetry more than
some
other people's might.
Thanks for saying that. It's a challenge, actually, to enunciate some of these words well enough so that people can understand them, because this poetry was written mostly in the 19-teens, and she actually used a lot of phrases and words that aren't so common to our ear anymore, like thee and thou and canst not and prithee and, you know, things like that. I mean, it's not all the time, but those words kinds of words pop up, and so I have to be extra careful to make sure people can understand.
And you didn't change
what I'm
a thing.
Talking about
what was written there comes out in your song.
Yes, with two exceptions where the poems were abbreviated a little for
to make it all work out.
Yes, right.
Yeah, you know, I think since we're talking about that music, is there one that we could listen to now so folks get a good idea of what we're talking about?
Sure. Well, if you want to play Recuerdo.
Is that seven?
Which is the seventh track.
Okay.
This one was written by Laura Caviani, and it's the hit.
Okay.
Everybody loves it.
And we've had Laura up here. She's been at some of the jazz concerts in the past. And
she's a marvel, and about the sweetest human being on the planet, too. Mm.
We were very tired, we were very merry, we were very tired, we were very merry, we were very tired, we were very merry. We had gone back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all night. was bare and bright and smelled like a stable. But we looked into a fire, we leaned across a table, we lay on a hilltop underneath the moon, and the whistles kept blowing, and the dawn came soon. We were very tired, we were very merry, we were very tired, we were very merry. A dozen of each we had bought somewhere, and the sky went wet, and the wind came cold, and the sun rose dripping a bucket full of gold. And bought a morning paper, which neither of us read. And she wept, God bless you, for the apples and the pears. And we gave her all our money, but our subway fares.
We were very tired, very merry, we were very tired, we were very merry, we were very tired, we were very merry. We had gone back and forth, back and forth.
Saxophone at the end there, Prudence.
Yeah, that's Kathy Jensen. She came into the studio and fired off about 20 solos right in a row that were just, each one of them was on fire. And I actually chose the most sedate one of all.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that poem and about that music.
I would love to. That's a famous poem of Millay's that came out in this collection of hers called A Few Figs from Thistles. And it really kind of rocked the world when this little collection came out. But that one, do you know, remember the movie Reds about John Reed, mm-hmm. Jack Reed, the son? Mm-hmm. He was an activist and a communist,
yep.
And he ended up over in the Soviet Union, and, you know, the movie is, I love that movie. Anyway, that poem is about him getting word that there was going to be, that the armistice was coming, that there was going to be an agreement to end World War I, and it wasn't public knowledge yet. But he heard that, and he and Millay and another friend, who was kind of her boyfriend at the time, rode back and forth on the Staten Island Ferry all night celebrating. And they, you know, had a bottle of wine, and they were hanging around playing in the sand dunes and watching the moon, and then they'd ride the ferry back and ride it back again. And so that's the story on that one.
Hmm. Wow. So kind of a capricious.
Yes, absolutely.
Way to come to a poem like that.
Yeah, and she was writing about just this certain level of freedom and fun and frivolousness that, you know, our culture was pretty uptight back in those days, you know. Mm-hmm. Women wore corsets and everybody had a certain way they were supposed to be behaving. And so for people to be behaving like this was...
Well, particularly because, see if that was 1918 figure, that she was, 26
or
something
26,
like that?
Yeah,
yeah, so pretty bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, and her life was bold too in other ways. I mean, she had girlfriends and boyfriends. She was bisexual and seemed to be accepted very well.
Yeah, you know, her lifestyle was would be considered pretty scandalous at the time, but it no one held it against her. I mean, it actually kind of enhanced her popularity. She was one of the people who was able to get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't think of it as being accepted at all in those days, but maybe it wasn't quite as uptight as we thought that time frame. You know, we talked a little bit about phrasing, and in that last song that you did, you know, you wouldn't know it was a poem. You wouldn't know that, and I'm assuming that, as you were saying earlier, that that's how it works for all these songs, the way that you're able
to
package them together. Yeah. Now, you also play the ukulele. Did you get a little of that into the tunes as well?
It's not on the CD. I started playing ukulele just in the last couple of years, but I do play a little uke in the show.
Okay.
And it's still kind of hard for me to sing and play at the same time. but I do give it a try. And Joe loaned me a beautiful little tenor uke. It's a really gorgeous instrument, and it sounds like a real instrument instead of a toy.
This is the concert is a multimedia concert.
It is, yes. Alan Freckman, who's famous for a lot of his work with Minnesota Public Radio, has designed, he built a couple of screens that are 7 feet tall and 4 feet wide, so they sit on either end of the stage, and he's got a projector behind each one, and he chose a bunch of images. They're either archival photographs of, you know, Greenwich Village in the teens, or of Millay when she was young, or they're just paintings and drawings that he felt really captured the mood of the poem and the music. So
they're happening while you're playing.
Absolutely. Yeah, all the way throughout the show.
Can you describe some more of the music? Is it, now that was a very jazzy tune.
It was kind of a jazzy, gospel-y tune, and because there are four different composers here, I think there's really quite a wide variety of styles on it. Like, you can't really fit it all into one bag, although I'd say, for the most part, it's kind of blues and jazz-oriented. Mm-hmm. Joan and Laura especially write in that way, but Michelle wrote a piece. She's the cellist. She wrote a piece that's almost Celtic. You know, it's got a kind of a jig feel to it.
Which
with this very
should work well
with this
that
really
poetry.
Cool cello groove going. Hmm. And Gary Rue wrote a couple pieces for it that are, I'd say, more like folk or rock tunes.
It might be hard to get prithy in a country tune. I suppose it could work.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe or maybe not. You know, I'd like to listen to another song. Have you got a recommendation?
Yes, it's let's play the very last one. This is an example of one that's maybe not where the lines aren't quite so short and pop tune accessible, but it's called Journey, and I think it's a beautiful example of Millay's poetry about her deep connection to nature.
We're listening to Prudence Johnson, and this CD is A Girl Named Vincent.
Longer have I looked back at loveliness and sighed? All my life long, over my shoulder, have I looked at peace? And now I fain would lie in this long grass and close.
What do you do to take care of your voice, Prudence? It's a beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you. What do I do to take care of it? Well,
do you have to be aware?
Yeah. It's kind of like being an athlete, really, because your voice is a muscle, and it always helps to warm it up. It helps not to abuse your body, and you know, get enough sleep. Sleep is really important. Water. Sleep and water, those are the two main things.
They're the biggies.
And then just exercise it.
Yeah.
You know, the more you sing, the stronger it is, generally.
How did you choose? She has a lot of successful poetry in that period, even. How did you decide on which ones were going to appear?
I didn't. I gave each composer a book of her poems, and they came back.
They chose.
Really?
And without talking to each other, they each chose different pieces, and they all chose pieces from this particular part of her life.
Wow.
the poetry that she wrote in the 19-teens.
That's amazing. Did you get to choose one too?
I didn't choose any of them.
You didn't?
I just took what they gave me, and I didn't edit. I didn't direct or you know, tell them to go back and try this again or anything. I just took what they gave me.
What can you tell us about the last song called Journey? And I hadn't heard it before, and I had read in one of the previews that it was a more difficult tune to do, maybe phrasing, or I'm not sure why. What?
Well, Joan Griffith chose that piece. She wrote that music. That was her on guitar and Laura on piano, Laura Caviani. And that is one where Joan chose to leave some sections of the poem out. She shortened the poem. And that wasn't something that we decided on ahead of time, and I guess I wish in retrospect that that had been, you know, a rule that we stuck to, that we that we kept to the whole poem. But she felt that in this way, I mean, it just, that with this much of the poem, it made the perfect song. And
she didn't know what to do with the rest of it.
It's a real joy to sing it. It's a hard one to sing. I'd have to say it's one of the more challenging ones for me to sing, because it's got a broad, not only a broad range musically, but a broad range dynamically. You know, it goes from real little and soft to real big.
You mentioned that the first one we played was the one that's really kind of become the hit. Do you have a...
I think so.
Go ahead.
People just end up on their feet with that one. It's there's something about it. It's really been the popular one.
And that's from your live performances, that you're getting the feedback from the audience on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, gee. My favorite kind of shifts around. Mm. I like
whichever
them all,
one you're
I
singing?
Have to say. Well, I don't know. This week I like this one, and next week I like that one, I think.
Yeah.
It's a fun project. We started it a long time ago, actually.
Mm. Yeah, I think you mentioned.
And came back to it.
What kind of work was it, getting permission to use the poems and then shortening them?
They're
poems?
All in the public domain.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
Okay.
So it wasn't any work.
You didn't have to do that. Okay.
No.
Do you find your performance evolve in these songs as you've gone from performance to performance? You've done maybe 6-7 performances so far.
Yeah, on this go round, I mean, we had a bunch of performances of this material back in 2004 and 5. We were originally commissioned by the O'Shaughnessy at St. Kate's down in St. Paul to put this together, and they actually kind of, the advance they gave me paid commission fees for the composers. And then just because I got busy with other projects, I had to put it away for a few years. But I always wanted to finish the CD. That was partly a time issue and partly a money issue. And, you know, it wasn't the right time for me to be getting it done. So I did finish it last year and have just released it now this spring officially.
And you had some help from the Minnesota Culture...
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're on tour because of a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund through the Minnesota State Arts Board. This really becomes like a long explanation with a lot of words, but essentially with some of the legacy funds, the Arts Board set up a new program called Arts Tour Minnesota, and the idea was to get touring productions out to all, you know, as many communities in outstate Minnesota as possible.
And a community this small really wouldn't be able to normally have, you know, 5 just great artists show up and play at the same time.
Yeah. It's been really, really helpful to have the support of this grant, and it has allowed us to be able to afford to bring the show around the state. We've got 10 dates in outstate Minnesota and 1 in Minneapolis next week.
Mm-hmm. Where will you go with this when you're done with these performances? You'll have the CD out.
Mm-hmm. I think, I have, you know, a lot of hopeful goals, I think, for it. But I think it really belongs or would be very comfortable in a college setting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's real multidisciplinary. We've got some history here. We've got some women's history. We've got literature and, you know, music composition.
Music.
So we can really approach it academically from a lot of angles, I think. And that's where I see it really being successful, is in a college setting. we really just have had overwhelming response from people who come to the show. I know a lot of people are dubious, and they think it sounds a little too highbrow or something. You know, maybe it might even be a little boring if it's about poetry, but it's not. It's not at all.
Not if Prudence Johnson's doing it.
Yeah, and we've heard some of the music so far, and I think we have time, Bob, sure. for one more.
Sure. Prudence, what would you suggest?
Oh, it's such a tough choice, but can you figure out which track Blight is?
I can.
Okay, that's one that's a little different from the rest. Gary Rue wrote it, and it's actually got a little bit more of a rock feel to it. If you
We're
can find it.
We're going to rock out now.
I think I can, but numbers would have been easy.
Yeah, I know. What was I thinking?
I'm just teasing. I think this is it.
That's it.
Hard seeds of hate I planted that should by now be grown. Rough stalks and from thick stamens a poisonous pollen blown and odors rank, unbreathable from dark Corolla's throne. At dawn from my damp garden I shook the chilly
song that was a little rockier, as you mentioned, and
have an amazing voice.
Yes. Thank you.
And of course, you got great musicians backing you up as well, as you could tell from that cut. So we've been speaking with Prudence Johnson, and Prudence is up along with five of your friends.
That's right. Well, actually, seven, because I've got two
altogether.
Crew: Alan Freckman, the tech director, and the best sound man in the state. I have to say, Maury Jensen is on our tour too. And
great.
He makes it sound really, really good.
And they're going to be performing A Girl Named Vincent, doing the poetry of Edna St. Vincent Millay. And that's tomorrow night. That's Saturday night at 7:30 up at the Arrowhead Center for the Arts. Prudence, I want to thank you so much for stopping in the studio and sharing your music and your stories. It's just wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so
Good
much. I
you.
Want to thank you two for having me. It's always a pleasure to come on the Roadhouse.
Anytime you're in town.
That's right. We're always looking for a house singer, house band, you know.
Yeah.
Well, next time I'll bring the uke in.
Yeah.
Please do.
That'd be just
Please
great.
Do.